Well, I can tell you that part of that prayer has already been answered because I do feel like I'm among friends. Percy has always been a very special place and just a very warm and welcoming place. And so I thank you for that, and I thank you for having me here this morning. Some of you I know, some of you I don't, but I count you all as friends. So it's a good thing. So and Steve, this is a very special, extra special, because Steve and I haven't directly worshiped together as a team in a long time. So I don't know if this works out. We might take the show on the road. I'm not sure. We'll see how that goes. But Steve has been a great friend to me and from early on. And even though he had just come out of seminary, he has been a mentor to me all along the way. And you all know, I'm sure, a great encourager. And he has an amazing memory. He remembers things that I just am like, wow. But anyway, I'm thankful for you, Stephen. Thankful for our friendship. It has been a while since I preached. I left Alpha in 2011. Now, don't panic, because I did have a little bit of a preaching stint in a UCC church where I was an unintentional interim. It's another story. But it's been probably 3 years since that's even happened. I lose track of time. So I am hoping it's like riding a bike, but at the end, you can tell me if I need to put the training wheels back on, all right? So, fortunately, I very much felt a leading of the Spirit this week in this text, and God's even given me some practical experience in applying it this week, which I'll talk about. It's a little bit different because, you know, as Mennonites, one of the things I really appreciate is obviously we read all scripture through the lens of the gospel and Jesus' teachings, and I like to focus on the gospel, and it was a challenging one this week, the story of the talents, but this is where I felt led to preach, and then I realized in the midst of all the craziness that Wayne had preached this on hope last week, and I was like, oh no pressure, right? I'm going to give a duplicate sermon. I don't know, maybe, but can you get too much hope? I don't know. I don't think so. Now, I do have to say that I started the process, I got very nervous because I started looking at these texts, and as I perused the lectionary text, it was like a trip down end times lane, right? They were all very ominous. Steve was almost right. I did start at Steel City, but prior to that, where I actually became Mennonite, I was born and raised Methodist. My parents weren't Methodist, but the church was right across the street, so they just sent us right over there. But I became Mennonite when I was 15, but I got originally involved at Bender's Mennonite Church in Penargyl, which was a church plant of the Lancaster Conference back in the 50s. And what happened is all those churches over time, or most of those like outlying churches, went charismatic. So I thought Mennonites were charismatic. Imagine that. So you can imagine my surprise at the first Lancaster conference, general conference I went to, and when they broke out in four-part singing, I did think it was the end times. I thought it was the second coming. I was like, what is this? So that's my background. And unfortunately, or whatever, and part of that, part of those churches was a very fundamentalist kind of thinking. It wasn't always very Anabaptist in its approach. So for a teenager, this was pretty exciting. There was a heavy focus on end times and that kind of stuff. Now, as a teenager, that was kind of exciting, though I literally believed so much that it was the end times and Jesus was coming that I did selfishly pray for a while that, and I, this is totally true, that Jesus would at least wait till I could get my driver's license because I really wanted to drive. So, yeah. So it's ridiculous, I know, but it's true. So anyway, this week there were verses like this in Zephaniah 1:18. Neither their silver nor their gold will be able to save them on the day of the Lord's wrath. In the fire of his passion, the whole earth shall be consumed, for a fool and a terrible end will make of all the inhabitants of the earth. And even the Thessalonians passage in the beginning, for you yourselves know very well that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. When they say there is peace and security, then sudden destruction will come upon them as labor pains come upon a pregnant woman, and there will be no escape. So you can see why these images evoke such memories for me. There was even a movie back then called A Thief in the Night, and it was all about these end times. Now, many years on and post-seminary, I realize, and thankfully post for me, fundamentalist theology, I now know some of these verses are to be expected this time of year in the church calendar, in the church year. It's actually part of the lectionary and liturgical schedule. It's part of ordinary time. As the year does end, it often includes these typical apocalyptic passages. And as one writer shared, one might expect that the images of destruction would end when the liturgical year ends, right? Christmas is coming. I mean, who wants to sing about the end of the world at Christmas, right? And yet, these verses and images continue even into Advent, the season of hopeful beginnings, right? Hold on to that, the season of hopeful beginnings. Now, if I'm being completely honest, the current state of affairs complicates it all a bit. I mean, after all, given everything going on in the world right now, one could just as easily hear Zephaniah and Thessalonians as if it was the evening news some days, right? Or at least it seems, and at least in this particular time and place. Now, is the world actually ending? Maybe. There sure seems to be a lot of writing on the wall, wars and rumors of wars, famine, earthquakes, drought, global warming, mass extinction, right? These beg the next question, if the world is ending, what or how will this happen? Will Jesus return to earth in clouds and great thunder to save us all? Maybe. I personally haven't ruled that out yet. But in the end, when it comes to the end, I've become a pan-millennialist, right? So over the years, there's pre-millennialism, post-millennialism, all kinds of things, and I am a pan-millennialist, and I believe that with God, it's all going to pan out. That's my approach, right? And I really do believe that. I really do believe that we can trust God, and whatever happens, it will work out. But regardless of your view, or even if you have no view, after all, when it comes right down to us, if we're being honest, nobody knows. Nobody really knows what's going to happen or how it's going to play out, no matter how many books they sold or what they tell you. Regardless of where you find yourself, the one thing we all have in common is we still have to find a way to live in the midst of these circumstances and in the times in which we find ourselves. The one single short, in this one single short, and I mean short, life we've been given, we need to learn how to keep living in the midst of that. In the midst of all these circumstances, in the midst of all the unknowns of these times, and just of life in general. And this is where I think Paul today is, in this passage, is most helpful. So let's take a little closer look. Paul does begin chapter 5 with what appears quite ominous words, right? Now concerning the times and the seasons, I don't want you to be, you don't need anything written to you, for you yourselves know very well that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. When they say there's peace and security, then sudden destruction will come upon them, and labor pains come upon a pregnant woman, and there will be no escape. Now, apart from the ominous end times approach, even the most positive, upbeat person has to admit that sometimes this is how life happens to us. This is what we experience in life. Not just in the end times. We're going along, things are good, all is peace and security, and then, bam, it all falls apart, right? Pema Chodron, an American Buddhist nun, wrote a book and by that title, When Things Fall Apart, Heart Advice for Difficult Times. I read this awesome book when I had to leave ministry in 2011, and things were falling apart for me in a very huge way. It was a great resource and guide and comfort then and now. But it's a repeated cycle, isn't it? That's not the first time that happened, maybe in that way, in such a dramatic way for me, but it happens again and again. We might call it death and resurrection, right? Death and resurrection. A repeated cycle, rinse, wash, repeat, right? Just this week, once again, I had this experience, and I had to put it into practice. What I learned from that book and that experience and from my life all in between many times, and what I'm preaching here this morning. I got a message from my dad on Thursday at lunchtime at work that said, call your mother as soon as possible. Now, I know that's not a good thing, right? My parents are 82 and 81, and they've been very independent, but in these last couple years, their health is declining and just their mobility and things like that. So, of course, I call my mom, and she tells me your father had a fall. So now, my dad is super independent. He had a fall. He told them at the ER that he fell raking leaves in the yard and fell over and hit a rock. In reality, he was hiking in the mountains. Now, I don't know why he felt he couldn't tell them that, but then, of course, they thought, oh, no, he's losing his balance because he sounded like he was just standing there. No, he was hiking on the Appalachian Trail and hit a rock and fell, and with his face hit a rock. So anyway, long story short, he's okay. He didn't, his face isn't. He broke four bones in there. He had to have surgery. He's home. He's not having pain, you know. So now for me, honestly, I mean, it was more of an inconvenience, but it does raise a lot of issues for me, you know, about their aging, about aging itself. And, you know, this is just how my parents, my dad, at one point, we're in the ER, and they ask him about if he has advanced directives and what he, if he wants to be, you know, resuscitated. And he looks at me. I'm like, don't look at me. I can't answer that question for you, right? I mean, so it raised questions for me, but I know it raised questions for him. You know, probably the hardest thing was when I walked in the ER and I could see the fear on his face. And just the, you know, he was in pain, obviously. I saw the pain. But underneath it, you know, his world is changing. And thing, the carpet was pulled out from under him, you know. So for my dad, it was bad. And it will be for a time, not just physically, but emotionally. You know, he was just going along for a hike like any other time, like he's been doing, like he's had so many times. He started when he was 14, and he's still doing it. And literally, bam, he's down and injured, and his world and his peace and his security crumbled. Fortunately, as is often the case, it could have been much worse. In the midst of it all, the surgeon said he's healthier than most 30-year-olds, which is pretty great. But sometimes it is worse, right? For us and for those we love, and definitely for those around the world. Now, it's not always so dramatic in how it happens, and it's likely that for many of us here this morning, we can maybe say, fortunately, not even so often that it happens that way. Sometimes it's the little things that fall apart in our life, but then sometimes a lot of those little things fall apart, which tend to have a cumulative effect, right? I always say it this way, life tends to ebb and flow. That's how I see life. Sometimes it flows and it's all good, but sometimes it ebbs and things and people and are pulled away or taken away. Regardless of what is happening, good or bad, big or small, we will do well to take heed to Paul's words of instructions to us for living in hope in the midst of whatever's going on. Paul continues in 5:4, but you, beloved, are not in darkness for that day, or any day, to surprise you like a thief, right? Isn't that part of it? These things catch us off guard, and if we let them, they'll throw us off kilter. But here comes the great reminder, first and most importantly, of who we truly are, because everything else hinges on this one important hope, more than that, this one important truth. There's a lot of things I don't know and I'm not sure of these days, but of this one thing, I am convinced. Chapter 5, verses 5 to 6. For you are all children of light, children of the day. We're not of the night or darkness, so then let us not fall asleep as others do, but let us keep awake and be sober, for those who sleep, sleep at night, and those who are drunk, get drunk at night. We are all, at our core, children of light, of the light, children of the day. But the world would have us forget that and lead us to believe the opposite. Henry Nouwen has been so helpful in my own healing journey, and he writes so clearly about this very thing. He says, yes, there is that voice, the voice that speaks from above and from within, that whispers softly and declares loudly, you are my beloved. On you my favor rests. aka children of light, right? If there is only one thing you take away from the message today, I pray that it's this precious truth and reminder. You are God's beloved. Henry goes on to state that what for most of us is painfully obvious, he says, it certainly is not easy to hear that voice in a world filled with voices that shout, you're no good, you're ugly, you're worthless, you're despicable, you're nobody, unless you can demonstrate the opposite. The challenge always is to listen to that still soft voice inside that calls us and reminds us that we are indeed God's beloved. This alone can save us. This alone can keep us grounded, even as the world around us spins out of control. Now, as Nouwen so beautifully reminds us, he says, listening to that voice with great inner attentiveness, I hear at my center the words that say, I have called you by name from the very beginning. You are mine, and I am yours. Deeply rooted in this knowledge, then, Paul provides guidance on how to live in hope or how to live out this incredible truth and out of this very place. Chapter 5, verses 8 to 10, he says, but since we belong to the day, let us be sober and put on the breastplate of faith and love, and for a helmet, the hope of salvation. For God has destined us not for wrath, but for obtaining salvation through our Lord Jesus Christ, who died for us, so that whether we are awake or asleep, we may live with him. Paul says, because we are children of light, because we are God's beloved, because we are not destined for wrath. Get that? Not for wrath. Not for wrath. Man, do some Christians need to hear that, right? So many Christians and so many churches have put so much emphasis on God's wrath and our sinfulness. And in so doing, they become part of the chorus of the world, telling us we're no good. When the emphasis from the church and from Christians should be and needs to be what we really need help to hear. You are God's beloved. We are God's beloved. Because we're indeed children of light, because we are absolutely God's beloved, regardless of what's going on, whether we're awake or asleep, physically, emotionally, spiritually, so we may live with God. Now, you might be thinking, Michael, I know we're going to live with God, right? When we die and go to heaven. Again, so much emphasis on that. Overemphasizing the wrong part. For the intention, God's intention is not later, not in heaven when we die, but right here and right now. Right in the midst of what's going on. Regardless of our circumstances, regardless of what's going on. In God, we live and move and have our being, living with God right here, right now. That's not only the invitation, that's the reality when we listen and when we can see it. Now, when life is flowing and not ebbing, that's not difficult to believe that or to even see and experience that. But as we've discussed, life isn't always like that. And sometimes it's not even often like that. And Paul knew that, both in the bigger sense and in his own personal life, in his own personal experience. And so Paul gives us what I believe are very clear and very practical instructions on just how we do this, how we stay grounded in God's goodness, how we live in hope in all things and in all ways, even when things fall or are falling apart. Paul says, since we belong to the day, let us be sober. I could say a lot about Christians being sober. We sometimes need to lighten up on that a little bit, right? We can be very sober. But we do need to put on the breastplate of faith and love, and for a helmet, the hope of salvation. Again, hearkening back to my fundamentalist beginning, there was a whole teaching around this whole spiritual warfare and putting on the whole armor of God. Everything was a battle. And I just have to say, it was exhausting. But that's not the kind of battle Paul's having us dress and prepare for. For sure, as Mennonites and pacifists, the images of armor might not be something we focused much on, right? Rightfully so. It's okay. But this is, I believe, very practical imagery that Paul's giving us. Think about it. we're protecting our head and our heart with these things that Paul is suggesting, right? Our heart and our head, breastplate and a helmet, right? With the breastplate of faith and love for the heart and the helmet of hope for salvation, or for our head or our thinking, right? Maybe we could think about it that way. Faith and love together with hope have the power to keep us, to protect us, and to carry us when needed, always, but especially in hard times. I'll just briefly go through these, and I apologize. I might be going longer than my way of tracking how long a sermon is I'm off kilter with that. So, or normally this might be a two-part sermon, but you only have me for 1 week. So here it is. So just bear with me. Faith. Consider faith. I've often said that the longer I journey with God, the easier it has become to have faith, aka trust in God and God's goodness. Still to this day, one of my favorite songs by a Christian artist is an acoustic medley by Stephen Curtis Chapman, and thanks to you all, I've been listening to it again this week. One of the three or four songs he sings it as it's part of that medley and pieces together is, "My Redeemer is Faithful and True." Now, I won't pain you with my singing, but the first verse is powerful, and it says, "As I look back on the road I've traveled, as I see so many times God's carried me through, and if there's one thing that I've learned in my life, my Redeemer is faithful and true." The chorus is, "My Redeemer is faithful and true. Everything God has said, God will do. And every morning, God's mercies are new. My Redeemer is faithful and true. Jesus is faithful and true." Putting on the breastplate of faith, then, is simply recalling all of God's faithfulness of the past and trusting God's continued faithfulness in the present and in all things to come. In times when life is flowing, again, that's certainly easier. But in difficult times, it's where the rubber of our faith hits the road of life. It's where our faith is stretched and grows. And when we know, and when we actually need faith the most, right? And so we're called to, and hopefully we trust in God's great love for us as children of light and as God's beloved. And then out of that place of faith and trust and God's outpouring of love for us as God's beloved, we put on the breastplate of love by loving others. We've all heard great and incredible stories and incredible acts of kindness and generosity rooted in love, even and especially amidst adversity, right? And these are definitely inspiring and challenging, but I'm more and more convinced that love happens most often in everyday, common, simple ways. And in these ways, that matter most. This kind of love has the power to transform both the giver and the receiver, the loved and the lover. This is, I believe, how we most often love God and love our neighbors as ourselves. Small, everyday, common acts of generosity and kindness, expressing great love, the love we've been shown by God and others, and the love we have and are growing for others, even and especially the ones we find it difficult to love. These then are and become a reflection of the love God has for us all. In this way, we can all daily put on the breastplate of love, finding practical ways each and every day to practice love. And finally, hope. And having put on the breastplate of faith and love, recalling and reminding ourselves of God's faithfulness, trusting in God's continued faithfulness, and allowing love to live through us and to transform us and the immediate world around us by loving others as ourselves through daily acts of kindness and generosity, we put on the helmet of salvation. This hope of salvation, not some pie in the sky, hell now, heaven later hope, but rather it's a real lived hope, a here and now, the day of salvation is at hand kind of hope, trusting in the goodness of God, trusting and believing as evidenced by daily by our common acts of kindness and generosity to those around us, even and especially in times of adversity. Living in hope, fully rooted in faith and love. But the greatest of these is love. If faith and hope are the armor, then love is the ultimate weapon, right? Love is the best way I know to foster in us and to show to others the great hope we have in God and God's salvation for the world. Paul closes with a final encouragement for the sisters and brothers there. He says, therefore, encourage one another and build up each other, as indeed you are doing. And you, dear sisters and brothers at Perkasi, as I know you are indeed doing here. As we prepare to enter the upcoming Advent season of hopeful beginnings, may we be able to hear God's still soft voice speaking to us, reminding us we are God's beloved, and may we continue to remember and trust God's faithfulness. And may these encourage and empower us to love through everyday acts of kindness and generosity through which we can live in hope and trust of God's salvation. For love's sake, so be it.